Yes, sir.
And Bruce, too. The juice.
And Bruce Ranger.
Bruce the juice.
Yes. Okay, so now tonight we're on step three, and it's all about God. And Russell's going to do step three for us tonight.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I'm grateful for that and grateful for a lot of other things besides not drinking, some of which I'm going to talk about tonight. And, you know, it's a real privilege to be here. It's always good for me to be at an AA meeting. It's a privilege to talk to a group like this, and it's exciting. How many were here last week when we played the game and did the second step? Yeah, you guys, that's exciting. People actually came back, you know. I'm always amazed when people come back, you know, after that. Well, you know, you might have thought that was a little off the charts, maybe a little, you don't hear some of this stuff. You don't hear some of these things at the regular AA meetings, you know, but I think I might take off the gloves tonight. No more Mr. Nice Guy. You know, I don't know about you. You know, I have to. You look, when I'm asked to do the steps, I don't. I'm gonna try to give you my experience. That's what I'm gonna try to do. Let the chips fall where it may, and I'm just gonna. And this is my experience. You understand? I mean, somebody else may have another experience. You don't have to get upset. You know what I mean? If it doesn't match your, you don't have to get upset if you don't agree. You know, I mean, you know, hey, listen, well, of course, I understand you're alcoholics. I understand this isn't exactly Well People's Anonymous. And you're going to get upset if you want. I'm not, and you want to something? I'm not trying to stop you from getting upset. If you want to get upset about something I said, well, go ahead and go with that deal, you know. And I had an old sponsor of mine said, when, you know, you throw a rock into a group of dogs, the one that yells the loudest is the one that gets hit. And, you know, our big book says, our basic axiom, the spiritual axiom in the 12 and 12 is, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. And so I'm here to comfort, I'm here to bring comfort to the disturbed and disturb the comfortable, you know. And you know, the great thing that happens and the way this whole program works and the way it worked for me is you stick around for about 30 years and you get disturbed enough and you don't drink and you try to figure out why you're disturbed and you pray about it and you ask your sponsor and you surrender just a little bit more of that ego, a little bit more of that crap, a little bit more of those old ideas, so that the way your wife talks to you, the way this guy looks at you, the way this sponsee disappoints you, the way the speaker was talking, so all these things start peeling away and they don't bother you anymore. And all of a sudden, the way this thing used to bother you, it doesn't bother you anymore. And all of a sudden, the way that guy was such an idiot, and you tell your sponsor, all of a sudden you realize he's not such an idiot, and all of a sudden it's not such a big deal, and it doesn't bother you anymore. And hopefully, if you learn enough, based upon the people that bother you, that there's something wrong with you, and life and the people that you run into in life, and the circumstances of life, sort of sandpaper those rough edges down, and hopefully you get disturbed so much over such a long period of time while trying to follow this program that somewhere along the line you become undisturbable. And then I guess they call you an old-timer. You know, I don't know what happens, or you're dead. I don't know. I'm not saying I'm undisturbable, but I'm less disturbable. I remember speaking to my sponsor, Joe Snyder, when I had about 9 years, and I was on the phone with him, and you know, I had joined the Fellowship of the Thumb Sucking Crybabies, and it's a fellowship in here, actually. You know, I mean, I know they talk about the Fellowship of the Spirit. The Fellowship of the Spirit is way later on. You know, for the first 20 years, it's the Fellowship of the Thumb Sucking Crybabies. And if you don't believe me, just go to a couple of discussion meetings. And in any event, I was complaining to him about something my wife had said or done, and she was apparently disobedient or not doing what I said or disrespecting me, who knows, spending money, who knows what was going on, and she was upsetting me. And so I told him the whole story. It took me about 10 or 15 minutes because, you know, you got to repeat it and everything. And he said to me, he said, well, you know why you're upset, don't you? And I said, well, of course I know why I'm upset. He said, well, why are you upset? I said, Joe, I just spent the last 15 minutes telling you specifically why I was upset. What she did and what she said and what she did, I told you. And he said to me, he said, well, that's not why you're upset. And he shut up. Didn't say another word. I said, that's not why I'm upset? He said, no. Shut up. Didn't say a word. I said, that's not why I'm upset. He said, no. So were you going to tell me why I'm upset? It's very important. Always wait for an alcoholic to ask. You know, you can't help somebody unless they need help, want help, unless they ask for help. Otherwise, they'll just swat it down. You know what I mean? He says, you going to tell me why I'm upset? He says, you really want to know? So, well, of course I want to know. He says, listen, stupid. He always said that because he loved me. He said, listen, stupid, you're upset because you're upsettable. So what is this, like Zen AA or something? But of course, that's the truth. That's the truth. That's what the big book is all about. That's what our program is all about. That's why men and women drink, because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented, sober, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. That's why we drink, because sober, we're upsettable. I mean, all you have to do is get sober for about 3 months and then be at 3 o'clock in the morning and have all those thoughts running through your mind while you're going crazy, and then all of a sudden it occurs to you, now I know why I drank. And you know, it can't have anything to do with alcohol. It has nothing to do with alcohol. It has something to do with alcoholism, which apparently attacks you big time when you're not drinking. When you're drinking, it's not called alcoholism, it's called drunk. And they arrest you for stuff like that. But when you're not drinking, the worst thing that can happen to an alcoholic is sobriety. Let me ask you something. If you went for 20 years, 30 years, 40 years drinking because you couldn't stand being sober, because you had to drink no matter what was going on, whatever made you think, how did it occur to you that if you stopped drinking, you were going to feel better? If you couldn't live your life without drinking, because every once in a while you say, I need a drink, or I can't stand this crap, or things got so bad or good, whatever, where you had to have a drink, and you couldn't envision a life without drinking, how did you possibly come to the conclusion that if you stopped drinking, everything would be okay? Well, I mean, where did you get that from? Well, of course, everything is okay for a while, because they stop arresting you and putting you in jail and all that sort of stuff. You may eat and gain a little weight, but they can't arrest you for driving while fat, you know what I mean? And I've proven that. And what happens is you realize what they say in the book is true. What they say in these books are true. It says our disease, you know, alcohol consumption is really just a symptom of the disease. You know, when we come in here, we could swear it's the drinking, because that's what drives us in here. That's what they arrest us for. They don't arrest you for driving while being an idiot. They don't arrest you for driving while lusting. They don't arrest you for driving while worrying. They don't arrest you for driving while coveting. They don't arrest you for driving while feeling sorry for yourself. Otherwise, we'd all be in jail. They arrest you for driving while drinking. So you come in here, you think drinking is the problem. I mean, God, they give it away. The name gives it away. Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. It's fairly clear. And then you give up the booze and it tells you, you know, the booze wasn't really the problem. And then you meet some old guy or some guy who's got about 14, 15 years or 20 years. And you say, how are you doing? He says, hanging in there. And of course, he doesn't realize that he's suffering from alcoholism, because the booze is not his problem. He's gotten rid of the booze. You know, mostly everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't have, you know, I've spoken to thousands of people. They don't have drinking problems. They have problems with alcoholism. Because apparently, even though the book says that these first 100 guys or 200, whatever it is, even though the book says they experienced much of heaven and they were rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which they had not even dreamed, and that remarkable things happened to them in their lives, apparently that doesn't happen to everybody. Apparently, it doesn't happen to everybody at all. Apparently, a lot of people are unhappy with their sobriety. That's why people drink. That's why people leave meetings, because they're not happy with their sobriety. They talk about envision for you. Now and then, you know, a drinker says, feel better, look better, having a better time. We laugh at such Sally. We know he has, you know, he's going to try the old game again. You know, because he's not happy with his sobriety. He hasn't found that deal. You know, I mean, he hasn't found that rocket ship ride where, while living life on life's terms, with everything, the traffic, the money's in, the money's not in, the checks are bouncing, the checks are clearing, you know, the house is being foreclosed on, the cancer is here, so and so. Living life on life's terms, chemotherapy, through radiation, through whatever, he haven't found that deal where life is all that good no matter what's happening. He's found that what he's found is that deal where he's not drinking and he'll be okay as long as everything else outside is okay. But as soon as everything else outside isn't okay, he joins he's in the fellowship of the thumb-sucking crybabies. And you'd feel bad too if your wife left you or if you didn't have a girlfriend or whatever. And every once in a while, if you're in here and you're paying attention and you want this deal, you'll run into somebody, and you don't really understand them. Sometimes they're speaking from the podium. Sometimes they're just there. Usually they're old-timers, and there's just something different going on with them. You know, like I talked about Tiger Woods last week. You know, I play golf, and Tiger Woods plays golf, and we use the same clubs. We play on the same course, but it's a different game. And every once in a while, you run into somebody in here, and they're playing a different game. You know, it's not that they're always in a good mood or a bad mood. They're always in the same mood, and it's pretty good. And you start thinking, well, they must be multimillionaires and be getting sex every night and all that sort of stuff. And then you find out, and then you find out things about them, like they're dying of cancer, or you know, you find out that they're going through a lot of rough. And you want to know something? It doesn't seem to affect their attitude. You say, I don't know what drug that guy's taking. I don't know what's going on with him. How do I get that deal? I want that deal. I'm thirsty for that deal. Says, if you want, we have. I'm going to use two books tonight. You know, you might profit from bringing the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, our basic text, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, and the 12 and 12. If you come here, you might get a little bit more out of it, or you can earmark some pages, because I'm going to read a bunch of stuff straight out of our basic text, which I think is important. You know, I do believe people miss some things because they're not aware of a basic text. They get most of their understanding of what this program is about. It says, rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. There is a path, apparently. You know what a path is? A path is a well-worn down path that certain people have walked over and over so that it's a path. It's not rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our paths. Our paths. It's path. There's one path. Now, you may not like that because alcoholics are, our chief characteristic is defiant. Who are you to say there's one path? Well, I'm nobody. I'm just reading the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just reading the book. A book that doesn't say do it any way you want to do it, or do what you want to do. Or, you know, I read a book that says you do what we did, you'll get what we got. You want what we have, you're ready to, and you're willing to do any length to get it, which means follow our path, then you're ready to do the steps. You don't want what we have. You're not willing to go to any length. You don't want to follow the path. It ain't going to work out for you. I'm just reading the book. I'm reading the book the way it's written, not the way I'd like it to be. You know, I told you that story about my wife. You know, my first wife, when she said, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I was stone cold sober. She looks me in the eye Friday morning, says, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. And she said it in such a way that she didn't want to start an argument. She's a beautiful gal. Beautiful house, beautiful kid, everything up on the line. She says, I just want you to know. She wasn't a codependent. She says, it's over. You come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. As clear as a bell. You know, I mean, I've got all sorts of degrees on the wall and all sorts of stuff and the IQ and the whole bit. I mean, it's so clear. If you come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. I mean, you have to be a rocket scientist. I drive two blocks and I go, what the hell she mean by that? But you see, if you're an alcoholic, If you're an alcoholic, you can put the whole thing in writing. You can flash it before their eyes. The judge can tell you 15 times. Anything can happen. And in the end, no matter how smart you are, what you do is, well, what the hell do you mean by that? And that's because what I've learned with myself and other alcoholics, because I sponsor quite a few people, and you know, over a period of years, you know, and so I get to talk to them and watch that vacant stare, and you know, say things to them, and then they're not even listening. They're not even listening. You know, one of my favorite things to do is I'll be talking to an alcoholic will ask me for help, and I'll say something, and it'll go blah 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 blah, and I'll say, wait a second, what did I just say? He says, what do you mean? I says, what did I just say? And he'll look at me with a blank stare because he didn't even hear me. Because that's part and parcel of alcoholism. That's a symptom of alcoholism. He asked me for help because he's going crazy. I say, this is what I think you ought to do. And he goes, blah, 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 blah. And I said, what did I just say? And he doesn't know. Because he's not listening to me. He's thinking a million miles per hour. Sounds funny, right? It's stupid, right? It's goofy, right? It's a serious disease. And so we read a big book, and you know what? After we're done, we've understood one paragraph. We think what this thing is about is acceptance is the answer to all our problems. No, it's not. It's not. If it was, it would be a very thin book. As a matter of fact, it would be a matchbook cover. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's the answer to a lot of problems. Sometimes courage is the answer. Sometimes faith is always the answer. You read this book, it's no more than acceptance is the answer. You know, I know we want like things simple. And so we read this book and we think we got it made, but we haven't really read it because we accept what we're ready to accept, and most of the stuff we reject and stuff that we don't like, we reject the God stuff and all that stuff, the important stuff. You know, this stuff we don't even read. This is like extra credit. Forget this stuff, Dr. Bob. Good old timers. And so what happens is we go to meetings, we think this is like a club, we have a good time, it's sort of like a bar, people are friendly, they like us, and we stay sober, and you can stay sober for a while on this deal. But all it is mere sobriety. It's not emotional sobriety. It's not the stuff they're talking about in this book. You don't have what they're talking about in this book. I mean, it's a good thing. It's better than being picked up and you think you're doing well because they give you the medallions. They don't give you the medallions for being emotionally sober. They give you the medallions for being physically sober. You see? You know, I mean, you could be a schizophrenic, you know, mad rapist, child rapist. You got 20 years. They're giving you a medallion. You're picking it up, buddy. You know what I mean? It don't matter. I'm hanging in there. Come on. You know? But the bottom line, and I said to myself, and it's such, you got to understand, this alcoholism is working on you full time in your subconscious, and what it's telling you is don't do this deal. Figure out a way of doing this without doing it. Stay exactly the way you are because you're right, just don't drink. That's what you got, that's what this thing is about. And so when I'm 3 months sober, and I'm not feeling good because something's wrong. Like, I now know it had something to do with my brain. I used to think it had something to do with the world and people and everything like that. But you know something? I feel pretty great. I've been feeling great for a long time. And pretty much the world has pretty much stayed the same. People have stayed the same things, same. So it's probably had something to do with my brain. So I'm not feeling well. And I say to my sponsor, it's not working because I'm going to meetings. You know, I'm reading the 24-hour book. I'm going to meetings. I'm doing it's not working. It's not working. And he says, what do you mean it's not working? He says, it's not working. I don't feel good. I had a bad moment, a bad hour, whatever it is. It's not working. A, it's not working. A, it used to be great, but now it's been 3 months and it's not working because I don't feel good. And, you know, if you're an alcoholic, what you ultimately learn is, the most important thing in the world is how I feel. I mean, everybody in this room could die of cancer, could drop dead. It's okay as long as I feel okay. You know what I mean? But if I have a paper cut and you're dying of cancer, all I'm thinking about is, well, look at my cut. What about me? You know? Because I worship. What do you mean, God? Why should I worship God? I've got my feelings. I mean, my feelings are the centerpiece of my life. Everything is about my feelings. Why did you do that? Well, because he did this. Because I felt bad. Because he got me angry. It's all about my feelings. It's all about my feelings, about myself. It's all about selfishness, self-centeredness, me, 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 me. I don't even know that's weird because you're at my alcohol way of thinking. It seems like the only normal way because it's like being right-handed. That's just the way I am. I've always thought about me. I can't help thinking about me. I don't even think it's wrong thinking about me. You know what I mean? I think I'm my best friend. I think I'm pretty okay. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know, I'm my frame of reference. And so I say, he says to me, he says, what do you mean? He says, I'm doing everything, and it's not working. He says, well, Russell, maybe you're one of the rare ones. I said, one of the rare ones? He says, yeah, you're probably one of the rare ones. And I said, the rare ones? He says, yeah, they talk about it every meeting, the rare ones. I said, I've never heard him talk about it. He says, oh, yeah, every meeting you went to, they talk to me. I said, no. And I'm getting excited now because I've been trying to tell him I'm different. You know what I mean? And he's fine. I finally got the old coot to agree with me, you know what I mean? Because I knew I was, like, unique, you know, I was different. He says, no, they talk about it. You're one of the rare ones. They talk about it every meeting. He says, I've never heard of him. He says, they talk about it every meeting you've been to. They talk about that. I've never heard of it. He says, Russell, don't they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path? He says, yeah. And he says, you just told me you're doing everything. I said, yeah. I said, well, you must be one of the rare ones. You've done everything. You've followed the path. And it's not working for you. A, it doesn't work for you. So this isn't for you. You need to leave. Now, well, this is how old-timers, you know, guys like me, we got nothing better to do in our lives, so you're like, we toy with newcomers, you know, that's, we cruelly toy with newcomers. So I, of course, my heart was broken, because this is the only thing that ever worked for me, and I thought he was serious, of course, you know, because he said in his series, you got to leave, you know, it's not working for you. He says, and he said to me, he says, stop it, you don't have to leave. He says, but don't be telling me that you're doing everything and this thing ain't working for you. What about your four stuff? You know, what about, yeah, because there was 99% of stuff I wasn't doing or I hadn't done or had yet to be done. But that's the way my mind works. I think I'm doing everything. I think it's AA's fault or the world's fault or my sponsor's fault or my wife's fault. That's the way I was convinced. When I say stuff that's untrue. And I buy into it. I say the words, I'm doing everything and it's not working. And you know what I think? I think I'm doing everything and it's not working. It's not my fault. It's never my fault. And later on in the sixth step, and we'll talk about this later on when we get to six and seven, it talks about settling. I'm a settler. I want to settle for only as much of this that I can get. I don't want to get fanatical about this. That's why when newcomers talk at meetings, you'll hear a lot of stuff about balance. I want to keep things in balance. You know, I don't want to go all whole hog AA or God or one of these God nuts. I want to keep things in balance. This is a guy who had a wife and kid at home. We'd walk in the bar at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and leave the bar at 4 o'clock in the morning. This is Mr. Balance. With a wife and kid at home, I would spend 12 hours in a bar. And then walk out, and who knows how many hours, you know, sobering up after that. And I do that 2 or 3 times a week, you understand? If not more. And thought my life was perfectly okay. Didn't see it. And I want to come in here, and I want to figure out how to whittle this thing down, this God thing down, so maybe I give it like 3 or 4 hours a week. You know what I mean? When I used to devote 12 hours just to the drinking a day. And I'm thinking about, I'm already figuring out how to do as little of this as possible and not wreck up my life because I don't want to become one of those fanatics like Russell or whatever that is. So what I'm going to do, all I have to share is stuff I've learned over the last 31 years and why this has worked for me. That's the only thing I have to share with you. And whether you think it's fanatical or crazy or whatever, if you hang around here long enough, you may find that I remember what I'm doing now, this thing is working, and this is what this guy was talking about. Because I'm not talking about things that I thought up. Well, this isn't like something I drew up on a board or some sort of formula I made up. This has to do with my experience. You know, like my sponsor said, when the man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk away with an experience. I'm not talking about stuff I'm dreaming up or I'm saying perhaps. This is stuff that's worked for me in my life. And I think if I have stuff that's worked for me, I figure when somebody asks me to sponsor them, it's because I have something they want. You know, so I'm going to give them what I got, whether they like it. I figure if somebody asks me to the steps at a meeting, it's because they want to hear something I have to say because there's something I have that they want. So I'm going to say it. It doesn't matter if there's a guy with 2 hours or 3 weeks in the back row that hates my guts because I'm saying this and it conflicts with how he feels about how life should be. I'm just going to give out what my experience is. I'm not going to try to water down the scotch, you know what I mean? Because he doesn't. Let me tell you something. I drank scotch neat. Does anybody know what that means? That means without ice, because I didn't want it watered down, because I wanted to get to that spot. I'd drink it out of the bottle if I could. I wanted the straight, hard, give it to me nuclear crap. You know what I mean? I didn't want the watered down bullshit. You understand what I'm saying? And I don't want the watered down crap in here. I don't want the. I didn't come here at my age to give out or to get the watered down. I want my money's worth. I want a message that has depth and weight. You know, I want to hear something different than I hear at 90% of AA rooms where they say, don't drink and go to meetings. Nothing wrong with don't drink and go to meetings. You know what I mean? But if that's all you do, you'll experience hanging in there for about 25 years. You know, and I want to get the other stuff. So I'm going to do this. This is what I'm going to do, something novel. I'm going to read from the big book and for Dr. Bob and the 12 and the good old timers. I'm just going to read. I'm going to read real fast, okay? Listen to me. You're going to trust me on this. You guys are going to figure this thing out. You're going to figure this thing out. I'm hoping if I read stuff, and I'm going to take it from different parts, and you know, the only thing I can tell you is this. You're going to have to, you need to read these books. I mean, read them. Don't do the, you know, the wife thing. You come on drunk one day, I'm leaving, you say, what do you mean by that, and then skip on. I mean, read it until you, read it. Read what they're saying. Read the words. Get the import. Understand. Without the skepticism. Throw away the skepticism. You know what they say? You know what? Look, I got a definition of skepticism, okay? The cynicism. A cynic, and all alcoholics are cynics, doubting or contentious of human nature or of the motives, goodness or sincerity of others. That's what alcoholics are. It's too good to be true. It's too good to be true. You never hear an alcoholic say it's too bad to be true. It's bad. Must be true. You know? Yeah, it's got to be true. So forget the good, the too good to be true or anything. What if it's true? What if it's true? What if they wrote this down? What if it's true? What if the God stuff is true? What if turning your life completely over to Him is true? What if having the absolute certainty that He lives in your life, you know, is true? What if all sorts of remarkable things will happen to you is true? What if they weren't lying to you and bullshitting you? What if it's true? What if when Dr. Bob says, if you're an atheist or agnostic, or you can't accept what's in this book, you know, I feel sorry for you, your heavenly Father will never let you down. What if it's true? What if there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find Him now. What if that's true? What if when they say, you're an alcoholic, you can never, ever manage your life so that you'll be satisfied. No human power can ever relieve your alcoholism, but God could and would if you seek Him. What if that's true? What if the reason they said right after that, being convinced of that, we're now, what if they say to have an absolute certainty of that? What if they said the great fact is this? What if it is nothing less? What if in order to be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence and experience once of heaven, maybe, what if it does have to do with accepting the great fact? What if it does have to do with absolute and complete surrender to God? No matter what the banana in your group says, I don't want to hear that crap we don't talk about. Who cares what he says? Who cares about the wisdom of the rooms? If the wisdom of the rooms is a group of 200 people, most of which are saying, I don't want to do this shit, and looking for a way out, just trying to make it through this, well, I didn't drink, so everything must be okay. You know, why would you want to settle for that? When the 12 and 12 says that's what we really want to do, most of us just settle. What if what separates the men from the boys, what if it's true? What if the stuff we don't give lip service, what if what separates the men from the boys in the sixth step is the statement they say is the man who repeatedly tries to grow in the image and likeness of his creator, I guess if it's a doorknob, the image and likeness of a doorknob, the image and likeness of creator is a man that you can say is a man and he's trying to grow in the image of, what if it's true? What if when they wrote this stuff down, they wrote down the truth? And what if the real problem is, not that the truth isn't here, the real problem is, you know, is if we walk away from all these truths and all these meetings and say, what the hell they mean by that? What the hell they mean? What are you going to get if you walk away and close your eyes and close your ears and you say, what the hell they mean by that? So I'm just going to read you some stuff which is out of our material. By the way, this is conference approved. You know, I'm not reading from the Bible, although they all read and worshiped the Bible. Hey, you can check me on that. You know, that's the bottom line. You don't have to do it. You don't have to do anything. You know, let me tell you, here's the cool part. This ain't a dress rehearsal. This is your life. You want to spend it anyway? You can spend it all the way to the end and say, shh, you know, why didn't I do that? You can do it any way you want. You can adamantly stand for whatever you want to stand for. You're going to get what you get. And you're not going to get what you don't get. And that's the way it's going to work. And at the end of your life, you're going to wonder, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I surrender? What was the, such a big deal? Why was I so pissed off when that guy said that? Why was I so pissed off about that? What was going on? Hey, wherever I go, ego. What's so smart about me? So let me read you some stuff real fast. And I think you're going to get the gist of this. I'm going to start with the big book. I'm just going to read some stuff out of every chapter of the big book. And believe me when I say this, and I know a lot of you know this, I may read 20 or 30 things. And we all have the same sort of idea and the same sort of thing. But I may read 20 or 30 things about this program, what this program is about, and what they thought this program is about. Believe me, I'm leaving out 300 things that I could read. For every one thing I'm reading, there's 10 things that say the same thing in our big book. Believe me, this book says a lot more than don't drink and go to meetings and acceptance is the answer to all our problems. So here we go. We're going to start with there is a solution. What we determine, remember, the game, that's the most important chapter. We have found much of heaven, we have been rocketed, and this is going to go real fast. Because I want to get here before the end of the thing, I want to get through all of them. Because there's actually a point I'm going to make about our literature and what they say after I'm done. Okay? We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and God's universe. Our whole attitude has changed. So whatever your attitude is about God, and whatever it is, it's going to be revolutionized or not, depending upon whether you surrender this thing. The central fact of our lives today, what does the central fact mean? I'll tell you what it means to me. That unless we're having a conversation about something else, all I'm thinking about is God. That when I'm driving my car, I'm thinking about God. As a matter of fact, when I'm talking at lunch with the 10 guys I'm talking about, we talk about all sorts of things, but somehow along, some guy gets around to the idea of God. That when I'm talking to my wife, I'm talking about God. And when I go to church, I'm thinking about God. And I'm reading material, I'm thinking about God. You know why? Because he's the central fact of my life today. Maybe that's why I've experienced much of heaven and I'm being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. I don't know. Sort of matches what they say. What's the central fact of your life? What do you think about all the time? Women, men, sex, cars, houses, money, jobs? What do you think about all the time? How's that working out for you? What did you think about before you came into Alcoholics Anonymous when you were drinking? Women, men, sex, jobs, all that. How's that working out for you? How did it work out for you? How do you think it's going to work out for you now, sober? Go ahead, laugh at the God thing. They weren't laughing. God, the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty. Absolute certainty. Not even a question. Absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which he could never do by ourselves. Which is the same thing, by the way, they say in the promises. He is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Let's keep on going. We in turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that works. If what we have learned and felt, seen, means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator. Are the children of a living creator? Is a doorknob a living creator? The children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship. You know what a relationship is? I got a relationship with, what's your name? If I have a relationship with Tom, you know what? I think about Tom sometimes. I wonder what Tom's doing. I talk about Tom. I pick up the phone. Tom, how are you doing? He calls me up. I have a conversation with him. Tom is part of my life. That's what a relationship means. I know you think, because you go to discussion meetings, that what relationships means is getting laid. Or I know you know what relationships mean is about romantic relationships. Or crying about your boyfriend or your girlfriend. Or when you're going to find a man. Or when you're going to... I know you think that's what relationship. But here, see to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a group where we focus on the central fact is him. Not coming here to figure out how to get a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a husband or a wife. Because if you stand by the principle where you see to it your relationship with him is right, great events will come past you and everything will come to you anything. All things will come, you will get it all anyway. And if you don't make him the centerpiece of your life, all you're going to get is hanging in there if you don't drink. You may even drink. A creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. Each individual, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual, in the personal stories, describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's what this is about. You know why I'm talking about this now? You know why I talk about God? You know, at every meeting I go to? Because I don't know what fellowship you're in, but I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, each individual talks about how he discovered his relationship with God. Not how he drank, or all the funny stuff that happened, although that may be part of it, leading up to. But somewhere along the way, if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's the central part of your life, you're talking about God and how you establish your relationship with it. And it's perfectly okay. And people tell you you can't do that are people that are not talking about what's in this book. They're talking about the wisdom of the rooms, which don't want you to read this book. They don't want you to get sober. They want you to drink, which is why only 0.5% stay sober for more than 20 years anyway. Because it's a narrow way. And we're going to talk about that. That's going to get interesting. We'll see how that. See if we have time for that. Why do people not do this? You ever wonder why people not do this and why people are worried about God and all that sort of stuff? Oh, man, I hope we have time for that one. Okay, chapter number 4, we agnostics. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. Listen to this. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. Ever hear somebody say good, orderly, direct? I'm not putting down, I'm going to put you down if that's what you're starting off with everything. But you ever hear somebody say do the next right thing? Good, orderly, direction? That's not AA. That's the opposite of AA. It sounds so good. It's like talking against mother. Now, of course you should do the next right thing. Of course you should use good orderly direction. If I could do that, I wouldn't be here. The problem, what they're trying to tell you here, is lack of power. They're saying a mere code of morals or better, you know, I'm going to do the next right thing. I'm going to do it better this time. I'm not going to drink. This time I'm really going to do it. How many times have you seen newcomers come in and says, I'm not going to drink again. I'm not going to do it. He's the one we laugh at. We know he's going to have problems again because he doesn't understand that a mere code of morals, you have to say you're powerless and throw yourself on God in order to get any of this stuff. You got to surrender. That's the whole thing. That's what it says in here. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Our human resources, marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. We had to find a power, and so we had to talk about God. That's why they talk about God. That's why they say, throw yourself on it. That's why they say all this stuff. Otherwise, they would just say, put the plug in the jug, do the next right thing. Good all the direction. And you can do that for a while. You may stay sober for 20 years, and you'll be hanging in there. And maybe that's all you want. Maybe you just want to stay sober and feel lousy. Or live like most of the world lives, you know. Quiet desperation, lives of quiet desperation. You know, later on in chapter agnostic, it says, many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. You have to give up this thinking. That's one of the things you got to give up. Rarely have I seen a person fail thoroughly followed our path. What is their path? They wrote the book in 1939. That's why I've got Dr. Bob McGill time. I'm going to read a couple things from here. Some things you guys haven't heard before. You're not going to believe that it's actually part of our program. Rarely have I seen a person fail thoroughly followed our path. In 1939, they wrote a book about something they had been doing for the last 4 years. And they say, if you do what we did for the last 4 years, you're going to experience what we got. And the one thing they weren't doing is reading the 12 and 12 in the big book. They weren't. You get it, don't you? So some of you guys, when you get about 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 or 15 years, and you're no longer pissed off at the church, and you're no longer recovering Catholic, and putting down everything that's Orthodox or anything like that, where even though the big book says, I know the big book says, you know, we lose prejudice, even against organized religion, we begin to see where they're right. You understand the wisdom of the room say we're prejudiced against organized religion. They're stupid and they're crazy. We have the real righteousness in here. Now, that has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous, you understand. Alcoholics Anonymous, that, you know what that is? That's sick thinking. That's resentful thinking. That's chip on your shoulder thinking. That's the complete opposite of what they say in here. In here they say we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. Well, I don't think so. Well, fine. Then do it your way. But I'm just telling you what they read in here. We lose all prejudice. If you got a problem with that, you want to something? If you got a problem with organized religion, you know what that means? You got a problem. If you got a problem with me, you know what? You got a problem. I don't have a problem. You got a problem? You got a problem. You're upsettable. You better figure out why you're upset, what you're all pissed off about. I don't give a crap whether the priest raped you when you were 10. You better figure out what the deal is. If you want to be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence and be, happily, usefully whole. So, you know, you might want to go back. We're going to go back real fast, and we're going to look about what they did in the first 4 years. I mean, I'm just reading this stuff out of the book. This isn't, you know, this is stuff that, you know, we read and we forget. And then we listen to everybody in the rooms, and we come off with the idea that you're not supposed to talk about. Why do people, why are they so scared to talk about God? They feel somebody's going to slap them or hurt them or something like that because they don't, because people don't want to hear it. Why? Does that have anything to do with AA? No, it has to do with people in the rooms, which has to do with worrying about what other people think about you, which has to do with the cardinal rule. If you're an alcoholic, you'll do anything to be accepted, and you'll do anything not to be rejected, which has to do with the loudest guy that you'll do anything not to be laughed at, which has to do with the fact that you feel so crappy about yourself, and you're so scared all the time. And that's all linked up to why you need a new car, and why you need a good-looking gal, and why you need a good-looking guy, and why you need to lose weight, and why you need breast implants, and why you need this, and why you need that, because it's all about anything so that people will like you better, because it's all about whether it's all about how we dress and everything like that. It's all about the vanity stuff, which leads into why your entire life is spent running after that stuff and getting that stuff, and you don't even know why you're running and getting that stuff, because it all has to do with people liking you and being accepted, which is why you're not talking about God, because they'll laugh at you. So you live an entire life living because you're addicted to people liking you and loving you and looking up to you. And so you run after that stuff for no other reason, because you don't want them to laugh at you, which is a great way of living. You've been doing it. How's it working out for you? They weren't doing that. And I'm not saying you get rid of it completely. I'm not saying I'm rid of it completely. But I'll tell you, start getting rid of that stuff, life becomes pretty good. It really does. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. It doesn't say good orderly direction. It doesn't say the tree makes it possible. And these often seem no way of entirely getting rid of without his aid. Many of us have moral and philosophical convictions galore. There we go. Good orderly direction, do the next right thing. But we could not live up to them, even though we would like to. Neither could we reduce ourselves in as much. We had to have God's help. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. We had to quit playing God. We had to quit playing God. A guy comes up to me, newcomer, whatever, old time, it doesn't even matter. He says something like this. He says, I ain't never going to drink again. I know it's over for him. He doesn't get it. And every guy who said that to me ends up drinking again. Every guy, hundreds of guys that say to me, don't worry about me, I haven't had a drink, I don't even feel like drinking, they always end up drinking. They haven't gotten it yet. The crazy thing is, the guys who are saying things like, man, I can't stand it, I'm going crazy, this thing's driving me nuts, I don't know what's going on, I'm confused, I'm nuts, I'm crazy, I don't know whether I'll drink or not, and everything, they do well, they get 20, 30 years. The guys that doubt themselves and don't believe in themselves and are looking for anything else other than themselves to believe in and are not playing God, you know, the guys that are not, you know, full of them and think they're the smartest and everything, the guys that are nuts and looking for anything, that slender reed to lay hold of, whether it's whatever it is, and look to something else, they stay so for 20, 30 years. The guys who got it all together and they're sharp, smart, and cool, you know what I mean? They drink, and they go down the tubes because they're playing God again. Because they're powerful. Apparently they're powerful. They can say something like this, I ain't going to drink again. And it works. Never worked for me. You know, I ain't going to get angry again. I ain't going to beat my wife again. I ain't going to do whatever you're going to do again. I ain't going to cheat on my wife again. I ain't going to do this again. Never works for alcoholics. When we sincerely took this position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. If we kept close to him, that means you got to know who he is. That means you got to know what his work is so you can perform it. That's what he's going to give. This, I'm reading from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I had a whole bunch of other things, but we only got 5 minutes, so I want to share a couple of things in Dr. Bob of the Good Old Times, just for the heck of it, and then I'm going to skip. I'm not going to be able to do everything. But I'm going to try to read some. This is from Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Okay, let me read this real fast. This is from page 96. Dr. Bob, noting that there was no 12 steps at the time and that our stories didn't amount to anything to speak of, later said they were convinced that the answer to their problems were in the good book. To some of us older ones, the parts we found absolutely essential. Absolutely essential. Absolutely essential. Were the Sermon on the Mount, the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, and the book of James. I don't know whether you knew that, but in AA for the first 4 years and for many years afterwards, it was absolute mandatory reading that you read Sermon on the Mount. Did you know that the first AA meeting was Dr. Bob reading Sermon on the Mount? No, you didn't know that. Some of you may have known that. Yes, Sermon on the Mount, from that book that people say you can't talk about that in AA. Yeah, the book that says you can't talk about that in AA, you might offend somebody, that's the book, that's the stuff that they're talking about. the incredible rocketing in the fourth dimension, things they got because they were doing this stuff. You know? Then it goes on. Let's go on to the next one. The surrender. This is why they used to do it in the good old days, before we were worried about people's feelings and stuff. On the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender. This is before they were allowed into the meetings. You understand? They take them from the hospital, which I felt was very important. The surrender was more than important. It was a must. Bobby, who came to AA in February of 1937, recalled that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, when you had indicated that you were serious, they told you to get down on your knees by the bed and say a prayer to God, admitting you were powerless over alcohol and that your life was unmanageable. Furthermore, you had to state you believed in a higher power who would return you to sanity. There you can see the beginning of the AA 12 steps. He said, we call that the surrender. They demanded it. You couldn't go to a meeting. You couldn't get in here unless you did it. And you'd say, well, then I wouldn't do it. I said, well, then I guess you wouldn't be in here. You'd be out there. You couldn't go to a meeting until you did it. If by accident you didn't make it in the hospital, you had to make it in the upstairs bedroom over the Williamson's house. Dorothy S.M. recalled the 1937 meetings when the men would all disappear upstairs and all of us women would be nervous and worried about what was going on. After about a half an hour or so, down would come the new man, shaking white, serious and grim. All the people who were already in AA would come trooping down after him. They were pretty reluctant to talk about what had happened, but after a while they would tell us they had a real surrender. I often wonder how many people that come in now would survive an experience like that. A regular old-fashioned prayer meeting, said Dorothy, who was then married to AA member Clarence S., who started Cleveland Group, which was the most successful group in Alcoholics Anonymous. I guess they didn't have a lot of problems with the third step or God in those meetings. I guess they didn't have a lot of that going on. I guess they were all pretty much on the same page on that deal. Goes on, Clarence Snyder. This is Clarence Snyder. Dr. Bob was about to hang up on me, Dorothy continued, but then he relented and said there was one man in Cleveland who might be able to help Clarence. He gave me Lloyd T's address. So Clarence gets in touch with Lloyd T. Here's what he goes. Here's the 12 step. He remembered Paul S. coming in and eating his breakfast, then coming in and eating his lunch. I couldn't eat, said Clarence. Dr. Smith came in later and took over. He sat on the edge of the bed and said, this is Dr. Bob's 12 step. Well, what do you think about all this? Then he paused and looked at me doubtfully. I don't know if you're ready yet. You're kind of young. I was down to 135 pounds, no job, no clothes, no money. I didn't know how much more ready I could be, recalled Clarence. Still, I had to convince them I was ready. This is what he says to him. Do you believe in God, young fella? He always called me young fella when he called me Clarence. I knew I was in trouble. What does that have to do with it? Everything. Everything. I guess I do. Guess nothing. Either you do or you don't. Yes, I do. That's fine, Bob replied. Now we're getting someplace. Okay, get out of bed and get on your knees. We're going to pray. I don't know how to pray. I guess you don't. But that's all right. Just follow what I say, and that will do it for now. I did what I was ordered to do, Clarence said. There was no suggestion. Dr. Bob was always positive about his faith. Clarence said, if someone asked him the question about program, his usual response was, what does it say in the good book? Suppose he was asked, what's all these first things first? Dr. Bob would readily and appropriate quotation, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all things will be added unto you, which in our book is now turned into, see to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Now, almost out of time, I'm going to skip all the other stuff. It's all basically the same. It's all basically the same or worse, you know what I mean? And I'm going to skip all that, and I want to get to just one part, which I really want to close this with, which I think is interesting, because I want to leave you something to think about. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're all familiar that Bill Dotson, the man in the bed, you've seen the man in the bed, was 12-step by Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson. You know, they show Dr. Bob, if you ever look at it, they show Dr. Bob there with a Bible in his hands and Bill Wilson, and they're talking to Bill Dotson, who was, you know, his story is called Alcoholics Anonymous number 3 in the book. You got to read it, okay? And in his story, he says a couple of things, you know. He talks about how he was 12-stepped. And let me find the deal right here. He says a couple of things. He says, they said this, and I'm going to read just a couple things real fast. It says, after a while, Bill said, well, now you've been talking a good long time, let me talk a minute or two. So after hearing some more of my story, he turned around and said to Doc, I don't think he knew I heard him, but I did. He said, well, I believe he's worth saving and working on. They said to me, do you want to quit drinking? It's none of our business about your drinking. We're not up here trying to take any of your rights or privileges away from you, but we have a program whereby we think we can stay sober. Part of that program is that we take it to someone else who needs it and wants it. Now, if you don't want it, if you don't want it, the next thing to talk to him about is God. Next thing, very next thing is God. If you don't want it, we'll not take up your time. And we'll be going and looking for someone else. I mean, it wasn't like begging him to have it. Or it was. I think what they're really saying, if you don't want it, we're not going to waste our time. We'll go look for somebody who's desperate enough that wants what we have, because this is what we're dishing out, and this is the only thing that's ever worked for us. We'll not be wasting our time. Later on in that same story, he says, Bill Dotson says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, or something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said this. He says it to his wife. He's not even talking to him. This guy's picking up, and he says, Henrietta, the Lord. He's talking about God. He says, the Lord. He doesn't say the tree. He doesn't say even the creator. He says, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. You understand what Bill Wilson said? And this is what Bill Dotson said. And this is in our book. They didn't take it out. I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. And you understand what that's all about? You understand what he said? You understand who said that? That was Bill Wilson who said that. That's why God's throughout all our program with him and Dr. Bob. Now, you understand all that. Now, I want to read you something else. This is going to be something for you to think about. Something about Bill Wilson, 3 or 4 months after that experience. The Lord's been so great to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I want to keep telling it and telling other people. You know, Bill, I don't know whether you know this. Did you know Bill Wilson was an alcoholic? He was just like you. He was just like me. He was an alcoholic. The same guy who said that sentence, which saved the life of Bill Dotson and felt so strongly, saw the white light. 3 or 4 months later, says the following. This is on page, you ought to check it out, page 159. In the early days, she recalled, Bill said to me, this is the same Bill Wilson, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. That's the same guy. He's not a schizophrenic. He's not like Sybil, you know what I mean? This is the same dude, you know what I mean? I said to him, this is Henrietta saying to him, well, we're not out to please alcoholics. They've been pleasing themselves all these years. We're out to please God. We're out to please God. And if you don't talk about what God does and your faith and your guidance, then you might as well be the Rotary Club or something like that, because God is your only source of power. Bill finally agreed. And that's why we're all here today. You understand that 3 months after doing this, after saying this, after the white light, after getting sober, Bill was saying, well, maybe I shouldn't talk about God. Why? Now listen to me. You guys are pretty smart. I think you guys know the answer. Why do you think he said that? Somebody laughed at him at a meeting. It's as simple as that. With everything that happened to him and everything that he did and everything that happened to him, some big shot, some guy, whatever it is, whoever it was, the same guy that's talking to you and that you're hearing in meetings, said, I don't want to hear that crap, or something. They rejected him. And you know what Bill Wilson was? He was an alcoholic, just like you. And you know what he did? His second thought was to throw God under the bus. And thank God she wasn't an alcoholic. Henrietta was there, almost like a sponsor, saying, what are you, crazy? What are you, crazy? And brought him up by the short hairs. Now I want to tell you something. There's very few people in alcoholics that are going to be your Henrietta today. The reason why, you know, meetings I do and other people do what I do seem so unusual in AA is because they are unusual. And the reason they're unusual is because we don't have a lot of Henriettas in AA. What we got is we got a lot of Bill Wilson, early on Bill Wilson, to say maybe we shouldn't talk so much about God because somebody will laugh at him. But the problem is, if you read the book, and I haven't read the whole thing, you find out that what they were doing the first 4 years, the whole juice that made the whole thing going, the thing that was the difference between being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence and hanging in there and picking up a chip and still feeling lousy on your 14th marriage or whatever it is, was the God deal. So it's real simple. It's real simple. It's gonna have, there's going to be two deals going on here. It's basically divide the room up into two deals. You can either feel that God has nothing to do with this thing. It's the luck of the draw. You either get in an accident or you don't get an accident. You know, if you either get cancer, you don't get cancer. You know, you either get married. It's all fate. It's all fatalistic. You do the best you can, but you get slammed and you can live a life. If that's the way you feel, there is no God. There is no nothing, or all that deal is going on. And it's just whatever happens, happens. And you have limited control. You're like an ant on a log, going down the river. Every once in a while, the river goes to a bend and the log turns and you think you're still in the log, but basically you can move a millimeter here and a millimeter there to get less wet. You know what I mean? You could feel that it's all basically up to fate, you understand? And you get to live a life of fear. You get to live a life of fear. Or you can believe no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how bad it is, even if it's cancer, no matter what's going on, good, bad, or whatever, somehow, some way, there's a divine plan, there's a divine influence, there's a God, and somehow in the end, it's all going to turn out okay, because he's a just and good God, you know, and he loves you, and he has personal attention on you, and it's going to somehow be an okay, even with the cancer, something good's going to come to this, and you can get to live a life of hope. You can live a life of hope, and you want to some what life you, it's not even about the God thing anymore, it's whether you want to live a life of fear, and constantly searching for whatever that thing is you need to drink, drug, or put in your life to be okay because you're not okay, or whether you can live a life of hope and be satisfied. That's the choice you have. Don't even worry about the God thing. Just do you want to be scared? Do you want to be fearful? Do you want to be anxious? Or do you want to live a life of hope? Do you want to be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence? Do you want to experience much of heaven? That's the choice. And you want to know the sad news is? The narrow way, and that's the narrow way, very few people choose that. And I'm not here to tell you why or whatever. And maybe it's because this disease is so strong, our ego is so strong, we would rather not choose that and have people like us than choose the other way and have people laugh at us. And if you choose the God way, people will laugh at you. I'm going to tell you something right now. They will laugh at you. They will point fingers at you. They will not like you. You know, whatever it is, they'll sit in the back room, they'll chat, and they'll laugh, and they'll think it's funny. You understand what I'm saying? That's the choice you'll have to make. You know, and I don't know. Some people are going to, the crazy thing is some people choose that God. They chose the God thing. You know, it's a difficult thing for alcoholics. When you're selfish and self-centered, and all you do is think about yourself, and you worry about what other people think about. It is a difficult thing. I understand that. I don't know why some get it, and some, I'm amazed that anybody gets it. I think it's a gift. God bless you. Thank you very much.